Welcome to our deep dive. Today we're going to be looking at some really interesting stuff. It's like AI is everywhere these days. And we've got this stack of articles about all these companies using AI to do some pretty crazy things. So we're talking AI and biology, AI and how we even get our information. Like, where do we even start with all this?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. What's really fascinating to me is how these fields that seem totally different are starting to like blend together. You know?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
It's like AI is this universal language that's changing everything.
Okay, so let's start with the biology stuff. One of the articles you gave me is about this company called Inceptive. Mm-hmm. And their founder, Jacob Uscarate. He's like this big name in AI, right?
Oh, yeah, he's kind of a legend.
Yeah, he co-wrote that paper. You know, the one that basically like created the technology behind all those AI chatbots, the Transformer thing, I think it was called.
Yeah, the attention is all you need paper.
That's the one. And now he's using that same tech to design RNA molecules. Yeah. It's kind of blowing my mind.
It is pretty wild when you think about it. What Inceptive is trying to do is use AI to basically create like biological software. Mm. You know, instead of lines of code, they're designing these sequences of RNA that could lead to all sorts of new drugs and vaccines.
So instead of coding software, they're coding like life. It's like straight out of science fiction.
It really is. And the potential is huge. I mean, imagine a cancer vaccine that's tailored to your specific tumor and has absolutely no side effects.
Wow. Yeah, that would be revolutionary.
It would. And that's what Inceptive is working towards. They're training their AI on all this biological data, teaching it to predict how different RNA sequences will behave.
So it's like teaching an AI to write a novel, but instead of words, it's using molecules.
Exactly. It's a really cool analogy.
But the article also said they're running into a problem. Like, they don't have enough data to train their AI properly. So what are they doing about that?
That's one of the biggest challenges in this field. You need tons of data to train these AI models effectively. And in biology, that data is often scarce or hard to come by.
So what are they doing? Making it up?
Well, not making it up, exactly. But they are having to create their own data by running tons of experiments in the lab, which is adding a whole other layer of complexity and cost to their work.
I can imagine. So how much data do you need to train an AI to do this kind of stuff? Like, is there a magic number?
It's a question a lot of people are asking, and there's no easy answer. It really depends on the complexity of the problem you're trying to solve. But in general, the more data, the better. But when you're dealing with something as complex as biology, you have to get creative. You have to find ways to make the most of the data you have. And Inceptive is really pushing the boundaries of what's possible.
And it's not just Inceptive, right? There's this other company, BioBrinfi, that's also using AI for drug development, but their approach seems different, right?
Yeah, BioBrinfi is interesting. They're not trying to reinvent the wheel, so to speak. They're focusing on making the process of drug development way more efficient.
Okay, so how are they doing that?
Well, think about all the data pharmaceutical companies have. It's massive.
Oh, yeah. I can only imagine.
BioBrinfi uses AI to analyze all that existing data and predict which drugs are most likely to succeed. So they're not just looking at the biology of the drug itself, but all the other factors that go into getting a drug to market.
That makes sense because developing a drug takes forever, right?
It does. It can take years, even decades, and it's incredibly expensive. So anything that can speed up the process and reduce the risk is a huge win for pharmaceutical companies.
So BioBrinfi is looking at the whole picture.
They are. They're considering everything. The science, obviously, but also things like how clinical trials are designed, where they're conducted, even down to the personnel involved. They're bringing all this data together and using AI to create a kind of roadmap for drug development, helping companies make smarter decisions every step of the way.
So it's like instead of just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks, they're using data to make more informed decisions.
Exactly. And they've actually developed software that automates a lot of the regulatory hurdles that drug companies have to jump through, which can be a huge time and money saver.
Yeah. It sounds like they're trying to make drug development more like managing a stock portfolio.
That's a great analogy. You're making data-driven decisions to minimize risk and maximize your chances of success.
Exactly. Okay, so we've got AI designing new drugs from scratch. And AI making the whole drug development process smarter. It's amazing to see how much potential there is in this field.
It is, and it's not just about developing new treatments. AI is also changing how we think about information itself and how we access it.
Which brings us to that stack of articles about the future of the internet. Even the good old web browser is in for a shakeup, apparently. I mean, the browser's been around forever. What's changing?
Well, the browser as we know it is kind of this window into the internet, right?
Yeah.
But the way we use the internet is changing rapidly, and the browser is struggling to keep up.
I mean,
we've got AI chatbots that can answer any question. We've got VR and AR creating immersive experiences. And the way information is presented is constantly evolving. It's a lot for the humble browser to handle.
It is a lot. And honestly, sometimes it feels like the internet is moving faster than I can keep up with.
I think a lot of people feel that way. And that's why there are so many smart people thinking about how to reinvent the browser for this new era of AI and immersive experiences.
So who are these people? Like, who's leading the charge here?
One of the most interesting thinkers is Matthew Prince, the CEO of Cloudflare. He argues that we need a whole new kind of infrastructure to support these new ways of accessing information. He calls it a connectivity cloud.
Connectivity cloud. Okay, now you're just making up words.
Haha, no, it's a real thing. Think of it as a network that's specifically designed to deliver information faster and more efficiently, especially for things like AI applications. Because one of the biggest bottlenecks for real-time AI interactions is latency, the time it takes for data to travel.
Okay, so Prince is saying we need a network that's as smart as the AI itself.
That's a good way to put it. And then you've got Josh Miller from the browser company, who's taking a completely different approach. He's developing a browser-based operating system, essentially turning the browser into the central hub for your entire digital life.
So instead of having separate apps for everything, you just do it all through the browser.
Exactly. Your email, your social media, your work apps, everything would be accessible through a single personalized interface. And it would all be powered by AI, of course.
Like the browser becomes the OS.
Yeah, that's the idea. And then there's Mike McHugh, the founder of Flipboard, who's advocating for something completely different. He's saying we need to be more mindful about how we consume information, that we need to be more intentional about what we expose ourselves to online.
So he's like pushing back against the algorithmic takeover.
Exactly. He's concerned that we're becoming too reliant on algorithms to curate our information and that we're losing sight of the value of human connection and serendipity.
So we've got one guy saying we need to rebuild the network from the ground up, another guy saying we need to turn the browser into the OS, and another guy saying we need to, like, log off and go for a walk.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's quite a range of perspectives. But it speaks to how fundamental this shift is. The way we interact with information is being reimagined, and there's no easy answer.
And AI is at the heart of all of this.
Absolutely. AI is driving this transformation, pushing us to rethink everything from the infrastructure to the user experience. But it's not just happening on our screens, it's also moving into the physical world.
You're talking about augmented reality,
yeah,
right? Those AR glasses everyone's been talking about.
Exactly. And one of the companies leading the charge is Humane, founded by former Apple executives. They've created this device called the AI Pin, which is like a screenless wearable AI computer.
Wait, a screenless computer? How does that even work?
It's all about voice control and contextual awareness. The AI Pin is designed to anticipate your needs and provide you with the information you need right when you need it. Imagine walking down the street and asking your AI Pin to find you a good coffee shop nearby. It could access your preferences, your location, and real-time information to give you the perfect recommendation.
That's pretty wild. And a little creepy, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, how much does this thing know about me?
Yeah, that's a valid concern.
Yeah.
But Humane is all about privacy and transparency. They're trying to build AI that people can trust.
I hope so, because it sounds like powerful technology.
It is. And it has the potential to change our lives in profound ways. But like any powerful technology, it comes with risks as well as rewards.
For sure. Okay, so we've got AI revolutionizing biology, reshaping the internet. Now it's like whispering in our ears and telling us where to get coffee. What else is out there?
Well, there's this other company, Hopscotch Labs, that's doing something really interesting with AI and augmented reality. They've created an iPhone app called BeBot that uses your AirPods to deliver location-based audio AR experiences.
Hold on, I need to catch my breath. AI, AirPods, AR, what is going on?
Aha, it's a lot, I know. But it's actually pretty simple. Imagine you're walking down a street in a new city, and as you pass by a historic landmark, BeBot chimes in and gives you a brief history of the building. Or if you're near a restaurant that a friend recommended, it might remind you of their suggestion and even share a link to the menu.
Okay, that's actually pretty cool. It's like having an AI tour guide in your ear.
Exactly. And it's not just about practical information. It can also enhance your experience by pointing out interesting details you might otherwise miss, or by sharing fun facts and anecdotes about the places you're visiting.
But why audio? Why not just use visual AR? Like with those glasses?
That's a good question. And I think it has to do with how intimate audio is. Visual AR can feel intrusive sometimes with its overlays and distractions, you know?
Yeah, I get it.
Audio, on the other hand, can seamlessly blend into the background, enhancing your experience without overwhelming you.
It's like a secret soundtrack to your life.
That's a great way to put it. And let's not forget the accessibility factor. Not everyone can wear those AR glasses, but pretty much everyone has headphones these days.
Okay, this is blowing my mind.
Yeah.
Well, we've got AI rewriting biology, reshaping the internet, and now it's creating invisible tour guides that live in our ears.
And we're just getting started.
Oh, boy. What else you got?
Well, there's one more company I wanted to touch on, and they're tackling a problem that I think is becoming increasingly important in the age of AI. How do we control the information that AI has access to?
You mean like all the data that AI is constantly sucking up from the web?
Exactly, because that data shapes how AI understands the world and how it makes decisions.
So you're talking about Citate.ai,
yeah.
Right? They do something called AI optimization, which sounds a little scary to me.
It's a pretty new concept, but it's getting a lot of attention. Basically, Citate.ai analyzes how AI chatbots are responding to queries about a particular topic, like a company or a person, and then they suggest ways to, like, adjust the information that the AI is accessing.
Wait, so you're saying someone could, like, manipulate what an AI thinks about them?
It's definitely possible. And that's why Citate.ai is so controversial. Some people see it as a way to manage your online reputation in the age of AI, which is a valid concern, but others are worried about the potential for manipulation.
Yeah, I can see how that could be a problem. Like, who gets to decide what the AI knows? And what happens if that information is biased or inaccurate?
That's exactly the kind of question we need to be asking. Because as AI becomes more powerful, it's crucial that we understand how it's being shaped by the data it's consuming, and that we develop safeguards to prevent it from being used for harmful purposes.
It's a lot to think about. Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground already, AI and biology, the future of the internet, and now this whole thing about controlling what AI knows. Where do we go from here?
Well, I think the next logical step is to delve deeper into the ethical considerations surrounding all of this. Because as AI becomes more powerful and pervasive, it's essential that we grapple with the potential risks as well as the rewards.
I completely agree. That sounds like the perfect topic for our next deep dive.
I'm looking forward to it.
But before we move on, I wanted to circle back to something you said earlier.
You mentioned that the future of the internet is still up for grabs. Like, it could go in a lot of different directions.
Yeah, it does feel that way. Like, we're at a crossroads.
We really are. And it's not just about the internet. I think this tension between, like, more information and more meaning is playing out in other areas as well.
Okay, I'm listening. Like, where?
Well, take healthcare, for example. Yeah. We talked about how AI is being used to develop new treatments and make drug development more efficient. But there's also this growing movement towards personalized medicine, you know, and a more holistic approach to healthcare.
So it's like, we're trying to figure out how to use these powerful tools without losing sight of the human element.
Exactly. And I think it's important to remember that technology is not destiny. We have choices to make about how we develop and deploy these technologies, and those choices will have a huge impact on the kind of world we live in.
That's a good point. So it's not just about the tech itself, but about how we use it.
Exactly. And that brings us back to those ethical considerations we were talking about earlier. As AI becomes more powerful, it's essential that we develop ethical frameworks and guidelines to make sure it's used responsibly, you know, for the benefit of all.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the articles you flagged was about Bill Gross, the guy who started Idealab. He's got this new venture that's trying to address the ethical concerns around AI and media.
Oh, yeah, pro rata. It's a really interesting concept. He's trying to figure out how to fairly compensate publishers in the age of AI, which is a huge issue.
Yeah, because right now it seems like AI is just sucking up all this information from the web,
mm-hmm.
and the people who create that content aren't necessarily seeing any of the profits.
Right, and it's causing a lot of tension between the AI companies and the publishing industry. Publishers are saying that AI companies are stealing their content, while AI companies are saying they're just using publicly available information. It's a really tricky situation.
So how is Pro Rata trying to solve this?
Gross's idea is to create a kind of middleman between the AI chatbots and the publishers. Pro Rata would essentially act as a clearinghouse for high-quality content from reputable sources.
So the AI chatbots would get their information from Pro Rata instead of just scraping it from the web.
Exactly. And the revenue from this licensing would be split between the publishers and Pro Rata. It's a way to ensure that publishers are fairly compensated for their work while also providing AI chatbots with a curated feed of reliable information.
It sounds like a pretty elegant solution. But do the AI companies have any incentive to participate?
That's the big question, right? But Gross is betting that they will. He's arguing that by licensing content through pro rata, AI companies can improve the quality and credibility of their products. Imagine asking an AI chatbot a question and knowing that the answer is coming from a trusted source, like the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, that would definitely make me feel more confident about the information I'm getting.
Yeah.
And it could help AI companies avoid those legal battles with publishers we were talking about earlier.
Exactly. It's a bold strategy, but Gross has a pretty good track record, so it'll be interesting to see if he can pull it off.
It really highlights how complex this whole landscape is becoming, you know, where information and AI are so intertwined.
Yeah, the lines are definitely getting blurred, which is why it's so important to have these conversations and to think critically about the implications.
Speaking of a complex, you also flagged this article about a company that's using AI to help doctors deal with information overload, which, I mean, that sounds like a full-time job in itself these days.
It really is. There's so much information out there. Research papers, clinical trials, patient records. It's overwhelming.
Yeah, and it just keeps growing.
It does, and that's where Abridge comes in. They're using AI to make all this information more manageable for doctors. So they're not trying to replace doctors with AI. They're trying to give doctors better tools.
So what the things can Abridge do?
Well, their platform can transcribe patient conversations, summarize medical records, and even flag potential risks or complications.
Wow, that sounds incredibly helpful, especially for doctors who are already stretched so thin.
It is. And what I find really impressive is their approach to language processing. They're using AI to translate medical jargon into plain English, making it easier for both doctors and patients to understand what's going on.
That's huge. Because let's face it, medical jargon can be like a foreign language sometimes.
It can. And it can create a real barrier between doctors and patients. So anything that can help bridge that communication gap is a good thing.
For sure. But it also raises some interesting questions, right? Like, if AI is becoming so good at summarizing medical information, could it eventually replace doctors altogether?
It's a question a lot of people are asking, and it's understandable to have those concerns. But I believe that AI will ultimately augment human expertise, not replace it.
So it's more of a collaboration.
Exactly. AI can handle a lot of the routine tasks that currently take up a lot of a doctor's time, allowing them to focus on the more complex and nuanced aspects of patient care.
It's like having an AI assistant that can help you with the paperwork and the data analysis, freeing you up to spend more time with your patients.
That's a great way to put it. And I think that's the ultimate goal of AI in healthcare, to empower doctors to provide better, more personalized care.
It's a powerful reminder that technology should be used to serve humanity, not the other way around.
I couldn't agree more. And it brings us back to that fundamental question we keep coming back to.
Yeah.
How do we ensure that AI is used ethically and for the benefit of all?
It's a big question. And I don't think there's an easy answer.
There isn't. But I think it's a conversation that we need to keep having. And it's a conversation that needs to involve everyone, not just the experts.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive. The future of the internet, the ethical considerations of AI in healthcare, and so much more.
It's been a whirlwind.
It has. And I'm starting to see some common threads emerging, you know, like this tension between progress and responsibility.
Yeah, I see that too. I think one of the biggest takeaways is that AI is not some distant futuristic technology. It's here, it's evolving rapidly, and it's having a profound impact on our lives.
And it's not just about the technology itself, but about the choices we make about how we develop and use it.
Exactly. We need to be having these conversations about ethics, about bias, about the potential impact of AI on society, and we need to be involving a diverse range of voices in those conversations.
It's about ensuring that AI is used to create a future that benefits everyone, not just a select few.
Well said. And I think that's a perfect segue to the next article you flagged, which is about the potential for AI to empower marginalized communities.
Yes. This is an area I'm really interested in. One of the articles was about a company that's using AI to help refugees access essential services, which is amazing, right?
It is. Targimly is a nonprofit that's developed this AI-powered translation platform that connects refugees with volunteer translators in real time. So if a refugee needs help filling out a form or understanding a medical diagnosis, they can use Targimly to get immediate assistance from a translator who speaks their language.
Wow. So it's breaking down language barriers.
Exactly. And it's not just about basic translation. They also take into account cultural nuances and sensitivities to make sure the communication is clear and respectful.
That's incredible. It sounds like it can make a real difference in people's lives.
It already is. And it's a great example of how AI can be used to empower people who are often marginalized or excluded.
It's really inspiring to see how technology can be used for good like this.
It is. And I think we're just beginning to scratch the surface of what's possible. Imagine AI-powered tools that can help people with disabilities navigate the world more easily, or that can provide personalized education to students in underserved communities.
It's a really exciting vision of the future, where technology is used to create a more just and equitable world.
And it's a vision that we need to be working towards actively, you know? It's not enough to just hope that AI will be used for good. We need to be making conscious choices about the kind of future we want to create.
So it's not just about the tech, it's about our values and our vision for the future.
Exactly. And it's about recognizing that we all have a role to play in shaping the future of AI.
Well said. Okay, so I think this is a perfect place to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about AI and creativity. We've talked a lot about the practical applications of AI, but I'm curious to explore its potential to, like, inspire us and delight us. You know what I mean? So before the break, we were talking about AI being used for good, and you mentioned AI and creativity. I got to admit, it's kind of freaky, but also fascinating. You know?
Yeah.
Like AI making music and art.
Yeah, it's one of the most mind-bending aspects of AI, for sure. You know, for centuries, we've thought of creativity as this, like, uniquely human thing. And now we have AI that can compose music, write poetry, even paint. It really makes you question what it means to be creative.
Yeah, it really does. Like, AI is holding up a mirror to us, making us ask what makes human creativity so special.
Exactly. One of the articles you shared was about this AI music generator called AIVA, which stands for Artificial Intelligence Virtual Artist. And it's been used to compose music for movies, video games, even commercials.
Yeah. I actually listened to some of AIVA's music online, and it's really good.
Mm.
It's not just copying other music. It's coming up with its own original stuff.
That's what's so fascinating. It's not just replicating human creativity, it's exploring new possibilities, you know? It's pushing the boundaries of what we thought was possible.
I don't know. Is it really creativity if it's coming from an algorithm? Like, where's the inspiration? The emotion?
That's the big question, right? And I don't think there's an easy answer. Some people say AI can never be truly creative because it doesn't have consciousness. It doesn't have the lived experiences that we do as humans.
Right. Like, it can't draw on memories and emotions and relationships, all that stuff that makes us human.
Exactly. But others argue that AI creativity is a new kind of creativity, one that's based on different principles. Like, instead of emotions and experiences, it's drawing on data and patterns and algorithms.
It makes sense. But it's still hard to wrap my head around.
It is. It's a big shift in how we think about creativity. And it's going to have a huge impact on the art world and probably every other field, too.
Before the break, you mentioned this company that creates personalized music using AI, Endel, right?
Yeah, Endel. They create these personalized soundscapes that can help you focus or relax or sleep. It's like having a personal composer create music just for you based on your mood and your environment.
It's wild. I mean, it's just one example of how AI is being used to personalize and enhance our creative experiences, right?
Exactly. We're seeing all sorts of new tools that can help writers and artists and musicians, you know, push their creative boundaries and do things they never could have done before.
It's like AI is this new creative collaborator pushing us to think differently.
Exactly. And I think that's where AI creativity gets really interesting. It's not about replacing human artists. It's about humans and AI working together to create something new and unexpected.
It's like AI is giving us a new set of tools,
yeah,
a new language to express ourselves creatively.
I love that. And I think it's important to remember that AI is not just about efficiency and automation. It's also about expanding our creative horizons.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground today. AI and biology, the future of the internet, the ethics of AI, even AI and creativity.
It's been quite a journey.
It really has.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's clear that AI is not some far-off thing anymore. It's here. It's impacting our lives in so many ways.
And it's only going to become more powerful and more pervasive.
Which is exciting and a little scary at the same time. But I think the important thing is that we're having these conversations, that we're thinking critically about AI and its impact on society.
I agree. The future of AI is too important to be left to chance, you know?
Yeah.
We all need to be involved in shaping it.
Well said. This has been an incredible deep dive. Thanks for joining me.
It's been my pleasure. Always a good time.